It's time now for the Sports Objective Podcast. No talking heads, just guys who love sports. Here's Dave Richmond.
Welcome into the Sports Objective Podcast. We're very happy to have a great, great guest with us right now from ECU Baseball. That's Corey Glore. How are you, man?
I'm doing well, guys. It's game week. How could you not be doing well at this stage?
Oh, my gosh.
I mean, it's here.
And, of course, we have the usual suspects, Kyle from LaGrange Barber. What's up, man?
What's wrong, David?
And Bubba Rosenbaum. Bubba, by the way, Corey, he has a new nickname. It's Bubba Bixby Rosenbaum. So that's another inside joke.
Don't ask, Corey. Don't ask.
I will not.
Ben?
I promise I would say that. Bixby. Yeah. Anyway, I will tell you later. So we wanted to have Corey on for many reasons. One, obviously, baseball. But another thing we want to talk about, too, we'll get to that in just a little bit. We want to talk about one of our favorite parts of your broadcast, and that is about your favorite, I guess we would say, was it the movie game, favorite movie lines?
Lines, quotes, lyrics, you name it.
Yes. For those who don't know, Corey works in lines from songs and movies into his broadcast.
Yeah, from the elder statesman of 94.3 The Game, our flagship, Josh Graham, he cooked it up, and he has since left the station. And so that means the game, which was very popular, more popular than myself, is now up for grabs in terms of ownership, and I believe you guys have stepped into the forefront and will be taking the reins of this, which I have run it by the higher-ups, and they're all for it. So,
okay.
Yeah, it's various people would give me lines from movies, TV shows, music lyrics, and each week I would try to find a natural way to work them into a broadcast.
So it's kind of like, instead of adopt a pet, is this kind of like adopt a movie game, that we can adopt the movie game to the sports objective?
Yeah, it's available to the highest bidder, and there has been one bidder, and that is
okay.
You. So it is yours.
Sold.
It is sold. Either that or I was farming it out to just various people on the street.
That sounds good.
Movie lines for, I guess, television also? Pop culture.
It
wasn't just streamlined into movies, because while movies are plentiful and give you great moments, it's the golden age of television, and we just also have the Grammy Awards, so music is now on the forefront of people's minds. So that it all kind of combined into a pop culture world that gave us a wide pool to pluck from during the course of the year.
Okay, I have an idea, and I'm going to do an audible here for you guys, so I want to see if this is fair. I have season tickets, so I'm going to give one of my games away, a family four-pack. How about that? And Corey gets to pick out, of course, the best line that we have. But let's do a social media thing where we have lines on Twitter and Facebook. Bubba, let's work in that, where whoever has the best line, Corey picks it, they'll get a family four-pack. What a way to start off the season, right, against Radford.
Okay.
What do you guys think?
That sounds good to me.
Okay, all right.
How are we going to do this? Are they going to play it at Corey?
Yeah. You tell me what to do here.
Well, so what I was thinking is that we could have it to people send it to our Twitter account, or maybe a Corey's and ours, and then we look at we'll have a group of them, and then he picks the one. What do you think?
They need to tweet it at Corey. What's your Twitter handle?
It is at Corey Glore. Very clever.
Okay. So they need to tweet at Corey Glore and at the Sports OBJ.
Yep.
Okay.
Tweet
at the Sports OBJ and at Corey Glore at the same time. Simultaneously,
yep.
Tweet us both. Your pop culture line, your movie line, your music line, whatever. And I guess whatever Corey deems the best one and uses.
Yep.
Gets the tickets. Now, what game are you giving them away to, David?
Well, we have Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. So
for this weekend, for the Radford.
Yep. Radford. Yep.
Are you going to any of the games this weekend, David?
I am not, but I will definitely give away I'll give away at least one pair. I don't know if you guys want to go, so we'll talk about it. Great way
some of you guys better be out there. Like,
we'll let the listeners pick which day they want to go.
There you go.
And use the family four pack, and then the other tickets will get used by a member of the Sports Objective family.
What's the deadline? What is the deadline?
That's what
for
I was going
to ask.
Good question. We need to. Well, when are we dropping this podcast? You know, we should have talked about this before we got on the air.
Well, this is what we're great about a podcast. So, let's see. We're dropping the podcast for this one. Is it Tuesday or Wednesday? Tuesday? No, it's Wednesday. I think it's Wednesday, right, Bubba?
Right.
Well, if we're going to play this game, we might better see if we can. You think we can get it out Tuesday?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, we can do it.
This is going swimmingly,
gentlemen. Exactly.
Well, if we drop it on Wednesday, the first game's on Friday, so you need to end it. What time's first pitch Friday?
Like 4 o'clock. 4 o'clock? Yeah.
All right, Corey, what time do you want to have it end? Did you choose the line?
Well, it's got to be in time for someone to get tickets from you if Friday
correct.
Is
okay, we got it. We got to end this. We got to end this sometime on Thursday.
Yeah. All right, we'll come up. We'll.
I mean, as far as I'm concerned, I have one card to play in this whole system, right? It says I pick my favorite movie line. It's you guys that got to logistically figure out what you're doing right now.
You've been listening to the Sports Objective Podcast. Join us next time as the guys will be objective, and the objective is sports.
Noon Thursday?
Yeah, that works.
Noon Thursday.
Okay. And I can actually... Maybe they'll let me leave the. I'll talk to the folks at ECU to see if we'll work something out. We'll figure it out.
Well, and let me piggyback on this. We'll start a podcast with you gentlemen in just a moment. But a brand new Twitter account this year that I would encourage you gentlemen, your listeners, and fans of ECU baseball to follow. Beginning now, like today would be a good day to start, is at Pirate IMG. That's the Pirate Sports Network, and that is going to be the home, essentially, of where baseball calls, highlights, basketball highlights are currently up there. A lot of stuff from the radio side of things, whether it's myself or Jeff Charles, that's where a lot of stuff is going to be living on Twitter. And if you follow that now, starting this week, you can enter in for a chance to win 4 tickets to opening day as well. So let me push that as well, because that's where a lot of stuff is going to be hanging out over the course of the season, where you can listen to me from time to time.
And that's at Pirate IMG?
At Pirate IMG. Search for the Pirate Sports Network on Twitter. You'll be able to find it there.
All right. So we do that as well. So, we wanted to make sure that I thought it'd be fun to have some kind of promotion, so did the audible there on the air, but we'll get it done. We'll have a Thursday by noon, and then obviously at Corey Glory. Is that the best way for people to send it to, and at the Sports OBJ?
Yes, does that work? Corey Glory is, yes, that's where I will easily see it more readily than anywhere else.
Okay. All right, we got that under the way. Do you guys want to do movie lines? Do you want to save that for later?
Well, we're already talking about it, so let's go into the movie lines, then we'll talk about baseball. Because God knows that's what everybody's tuning in for us, is for us to talk about movie lines.
I thought it was movie lines. No, I'm kidding. So you guys want to start? Who wants to start? You guys probably even... I mean, Kyle took the whole day off. I mean, I can't believe you're not ready.
Hey, look, you know me. I traveled this weekend. I had to have a day to recuperate. Bubba, hit him with a line.
All right. Judge Smales from Caddyshack. You'll get nothing and like it.
Easy one out of the gates. I like working my way into it, kind of getting my feet under me.
That's a very easy one. I have one for you. This is a very random one, but I'm trying to do the Mr. Josh Graham, a tough one that'll make you – I don't know if you can –
He was very good at this. He was very good at this.
So I'm going to try to do my best Josh Graham movie game impersonation. I will go with Love the 40-Year-Old Virgin. Is there any way in the famous, I guess, chest waxing scene when he yells out ad lib, Steve Carell does Kelly Clarkson. Is there any way that you can get that line in there? I don't know if you can or not, but that may be too random.
I will write it down. I will say I think that was offered up last year, and
oh,
I don't know
okay.
if I got to it. I mean, there will be some natural crossover. It's fine. It's okay. It's a brand new year. It's a new day.
That's right. A brand
not
new day.
Corey, all you got to do. I wonder if anybody's ever had Kelly Clarkson as their walk-up music.
just Steve Carell screaming that.
Yeah. Kelly Clarkson. There, you know.
Yeah, we have one. How about Kyle and I will share this one. He came up with the name of the movie. The movie is from the late 80s, I would say about 1987. She was a big actress back then, Elizabeth Shue. The movie Adventures of Babysitting. I don't know if you've ever heard of the movie.
I've heard of it. I saw it long, long ago. And yes, okay. I've heard of the movie.
So the one that we can use on our family-friendly podcast.
And an even more family-friendly radio broadcast.
Exactly. Is that's what we're thinking about, is there's the old singer, blues singer, I believe it was Albert Collins. He has a line in the movie where he says...
B.B. King.
B.B. King?
B.B. King.
All right, I'll look it again. I thought it was Albert Collins. But anyway, it doesn't matter. The line is, nobody gets out of here without singing the blues. I don't know if there's any way you can pull that one off or not. We're trying to...
That's actually great. Nobody gets out of here without singing the blues. But that's a great line.
I very much enjoy that line. And okay. You have to understand, now, since this is edition one of you guys orchestrating this, I'm writing it down, and so the pause that you hear from me is my brain not being able to do two things at once. But the second element here is I'm also trying to concoct situations that these would all apply for right off the bat. Kelly Clarkson is going to be tricky.
Yeah, no, that's why I told you. That's why I had to do a job.
But I already got a handful in mind for Nobody Gets Out of Here Without Singing the Blues. So
we have one for Spencer Brickhouse, even for the players. So we're thinking
this is a curveball. Strike one. I wasn't expecting that.
Yeah, so we think with Spencer, I know Cliff Godwin doesn't like the whole Mohawk thing, and the guys came up with it. So you guys, you tell them what the line is.
Mr. T, I pity the fool tries to strike out Spencer Brickhouse.
Or something, I pity the fool. Have something with Mr. T reference because of the Mohawk.
All right.
I don't know if that'll work or not.
I'm going to go verbatim what was just said. I pity the fool tries to strike out Spencer Brickhouse.
All right.
And I do have to get back up with Spencer. Is he would be he fed me lines every game at the end of last year, and so I have to make sure he's
see if he's back in
the game for his junior year.
Now, how many lines do you like to get in per three games? You got three games. How many lines do you like to try to get in?
I don't know if I have a quota that I try to hit per game, to be honest. Usually I wound up with, I would say, 6 to 8 lines a weekend, and I would branch it out into the midweek if need be. It just depended on how many lines were accumulated from Josh and Robert back at the game, as well as they got fans to send stuff in as well. So, you know, it never got more than 10 in any given selection. Then I would just try and drop them in here and there.
All right.
Gotcha. Okay.
A question I have, are there ones that are too obvious, like something like Star Wars, May the Force Be With You? Is that too obvious, too easy? Are those ones you're going to stay away from, or do you like to try to have the ones that are some of the most famous movie lines of all time?
I don't put any sort of restriction on the popularity of the line or like the most well-known movies. For me, it's all about, May the Force Be With You is maybe the most famous movie line in history. It's debatable, but it's up there.
Yeah.
But that is a little tricky to work into the flow of a baseball game. So that's kind of how I look at it more than, you know, if you gave me, we're going to need a bigger boat, it's a very well-known movie line. How do you put that into the context of a live baseball game? That's the trick. So you could go as obscure as you want with your movie lines. I just watched a bunch of obscure movies over the weekend, and if you want to pluck one from an indie movie you just saw, fire away. But the challenge is more, how does it work, not what does it sound like.
I got something for you. You're talking about what you did this weekend. I went to see Cody Jenks in concert this past weekend. So I'm going to give you a Cody Jenks song lyric. And this is going to be pretty easy to work in, but it's going to be a rather specific.
And he's a country, he's like an old country kind of guy. Is that?
He's outlaw. Outlaw Country.
Outlaw Country.
This would be a very specific situation. Loud, thunder, heavy rain.
That's the line.
That's the line. Loud, thunder, heavy rain.
Yeah, it has to. I guess it has to rain.
Loud, thunder, heavy rain. There are a couple ways you can work that in for sure.
Yeah.
And thank you for explaining. I'm in the wrong part of the country. I know, but I'm not a country music fan, and so thank you for explaining who that is to me. Because
no,
my country is
country. He's awesome. He's awesome.
Okay. Country and I have never seen eye to eye, and I apologize
right.
ahead of time.
No,
what kind of music? What kind of music do you enjoy, Corey?
I'm a classic rock guy. I do like the blues. I am a big B.B. King fan, and I like there's kind of modern rock blues crossover right now. That my favorite band going is Nathaniel Rateliff and the Night Sweats, which is a real great mix of rock and blues. There's some soul in there too. That's the stuff that speaks to me.
Gotcha. Okay, I can respect that.
Now, Corey, I have another from Caddyshack. Now I know why the tigers eat their young.
That's a great one. That's
I like
great
that one.
Line.
I like that one a lot.
So if an opposing coach or an opposing player is acting a fool or something of that nature.
That just even out of the context of baseball, that's just a great
right.
one-off line just to throw out there. All right, so I've got six written down right now. All right, yeah.
Is that good? Or do you have enough, or you think we got a couple more?
Well, I'll leave a few for fan submission.
Yeah, you're about to give away some merchandise here, right? So
we
do need some fan submissions into all this. So, but yeah, right. I mean that's a good start. That's a very good start to opening weekend.
Yes, it is, and good luck. We want to talk about obviously baseball, so we want to get that out of the way. So people that hung in there through it with
that would be great if you had me on and we didn't talk one moment of baseball.
Okay,
that would be really
talk movie lines, what kind of music you like?
Yeah,
food.
Have you guys seen Bird Box? Like it? No,
it's a great movie. Great movie. I haven't
seen it yet.
I liked it better when it was The Quiet Place.
No, I haven't seen The Quiet Place. Is it similar?
A Quiet Place is much better. Bird Box is fine. A Quiet Place blows it out of the water.
Well, I was telling someone, the reason the Bird Box is so popular is because
the Bird Box
Challenge doing a horror movie on Netflix, so everybody can see it. Had that movie not had Sandra Bullock in it, nobody would have watched it. Had it been a Sandra Bullock movie at the theater, nobody would have went to see it.
I don't know if I agree on the last part. We're going deep dive here. I think Sandra Bullock is clearly the driving factor of that movie. And why people watch it. And the fact that it was on Netflix and everyone could watch that has a subscription. But she's a big enough box office star now where I bet it could have raked in some cash.
Well, plus she's a pirate.
There it is. Yeah.
Yeah, that's why everybody's going to see the movie. Yeah. Or watch it on Netflix. So how about them pirates?
related. It actually fits.
Professional segue right there. That is a really great segue.
Thank you. Thank you. I'm excited about this weekend. Two things we definitely want to talk about that you can maybe expound on. Were you at the baseball banquet on Saturday night? We're putting you on the spot. I didn't ask you that beforehand.
I was not able to make it out there for the baseball banquet. No.
Okay. I was just going to get your take on things. So I'll move right along. But I was happy about one of the things, the reason why I love Coach Cliff Godwin so much is the fact that Bubba and I were talking about before, earlier, he's a visionary. And what I mean by that is he told us on the podcast in making his debut on the Sports Objective about the $4 million fundraiser they're going to have to a whole bunch of stuff. I didn't know if you want to talk about that. I thought it was really cool that he put it out there, his plan, what he wants, the upgrades to Clark LeClair Stadium, and I just thought that that's exactly what we need across the board in Pirate Nation.
No, to have when I was in town a couple weeks ago to catch scrimmage and practice and to kind of meet up with the guys, and I had first heard then about the plan for the clubhouse, the locker room, kind of the team room, all those renovations that were half of what he dropped at the banquet on Saturday. So I had a little bit of an inkling that that was already on the horizon. And then the hospitality area that's going in right now, or at least for, I believe, the LeClaire Classic is when it's going to start down the left field line and into the jungle,
right,
where season ticket holders, Pirate Club members can hang out there, buy some beverages, and watch the game from there. This is all a part of a plan that he has had the moment he got here, which was not just to win with this team and to go far with this team, but to make this stadium and this environment something big, something bigger than where this program, which has a long, illustrious history, than even that has seen before, and to make it a mecca of college baseball and make it a mecca of college sports that tends to get overlooked, this sport does in the grand scheme of this. So to have him come in with, frankly, it's the SEC mentality of,
right,
seeing all those stadiums and all the money poured into those facilities and all the amenities that each one of those parks has and continues to grow upon, and say, this is what we need to shoot for. This is the type of program that we are. We are comparable to these types of programs on the field. Let's get it around the field as well. And so it's a nonstop process. And what I think is great about this is that there's no real sense of complacency, where you can look at, you know, I was able to get into the new indoor hitting facility when I was in town a couple weeks ago and see that down the right field line. And it's a great setup for what this, and something that this team needs. And then for him to say, this is great, now let's do this here, and let's do this here, and let's change this, and let's change this, and let's make this truly something special. You know, I feel Clark LeClaire Stadium for years since it opened has been driven by its environment and by the fans that show up and bring that to life. And now the stadium and the facility itself with all these plans is catching up to what the people bring into it. So that's the driving factor for Cliff to keep ushering out these new ideas and these plans, to keep changing what's there at Clark LeClaire Stadium, because it can only get better.
And you were talking, and another thing to mention that is, of course, is it underneath the ground for the old hitting facility? Isn't that going to be changed into essentially, I guess, a fancy word, it's like a pitching lab where the pitchers can work underground now?
Yeah, underneath the seats down the first baseline, that's where the
right.
old hitting facility is, and that is being refashioned to a pitcher's area. They can do pitching work in the new indoor facility. They can drop nets down and do it. They don't have space to accommodate everybody in there, both hitting and pitching at the same time, but they can still do it and make do with it. With both facets of the game right now, but they'll refashion what's going on underneath the first base stands and make that into indoor pitching facilities as well. So, yeah, it's all evolving. It's a snowball that keeps growing in mass as it rolls downhill. And where it ends, we don't know, because I know there are a lot of other plans and ideas that Coach Godwin has that he wants to see happen at Clark LeClaire, and he keeps putting them into action, which you don't get a lot from head coaches in this sport who are this ambitious with the facilities. Usually it's the athletic department just overall that changes stuff. To have the head coach say, we're going to do this, here's why, and explain why, is very rare and pretty special.
Now,
yeah,
Corey,
go ahead.
Go ahead, Dave.
I was just going to say that Bubba and I were talking about the fact that, again, he's a visionary. He, for those of us, there are a lot of us that are in the working middle class who I think will donate more. The reason why they've been holding back is the stuff that's happened in the past we're not going to talk about. But now that we're in a good place as far as the athletic administration, coaches, et cetera, across the board, we need to see a plan. And Cliff is very good about laying out like his vision. He did that Saturday night at the baseball banquet. And if we can get that across the board, there's a lot of Pirate fans right now telling Bubba they may have $10, they maybe have $100, $1,000. But when they give to that baseball fund, the campaign, if you will, the $4 million, we might not have $4 million underneath the mattress, but we might have the $100 or $1,000 we can give, and we can take ownership and know that some of our money went towards what Coach Godwin wants.
What I've realized in my, I'm beginning year four at the microphone of this team here coming up this weekend, is what the fan base, the community, the alum base, when they buy into something at ECU, it's not necessarily results driven per se. It is vision driven. And if there is an idea in place, then people start buying in, and then it's closed up by the belief and the desire to get the job done. And that's something that Cliff has shown on the field and off the field to improve this program. And that's something that you're seeing now in basketball with Joe Dooley. And that's why you're seeing that buy-in coming from the community and the alum base. And now you're starting to see the early beginnings of that with Mike Houston. So you're seeing people take pride in the school, pride in the program, and pride in the community, and say, here's how I want to improve this. Here's my plan, and I believe in it. And that's what it takes to get the buy-in from everyone else. And so Cliff was kind of the first of this group that has done that. Now Coach Dooley has come in. Now Coach Houston has come in. And who knows what's to come after that for all these programs. But, I mean, from moment one that he stepped back on campus, he's made it clear what he's wanted to do, and he's had the drive to do it. And so it's easy to buy in to what he's saying and what he's telling everyone, because he's actually putting it in motion and it's getting done.
Now, Corey, you said you were unable to attend the ECU baseball banquet on Saturday night. I do believe you were able to attend some of the scrimmages, or at least one of the scrimmages this weekend. So let's go through. We talked to Coach O. We've talked to a few folks about ECU baseball. But let's go around the horn positionally, and let's break things down position by position. Let's start off, of course, behind the plate you have Jake Washer. And can you expound upon that and just take us around the horn?
It was funny, after the draft last summer, when the Pirates lost three guys from the 2018 team in the draft, and Cliff was interviewed. I forget which news outlet interviewed him, but they said, there's a couple of substantial pieces that you lost there in Hoba, Litton, and William Sutton. How do you think about how everything shook out there? And he said, well, I got to say, the best news that we got was that Jake Washer stayed, because he was draft eligible as a redshirt sophomore. And to have a veteran catcher in the fold, it is not overstating it when I say, if you have an elder statesman catcher behind the plate, everything else by and large is going to slot into place rather comfortably. To have that stabilization behind the plate of a guy defensively who's become a wall and has that type of pop in his bat, the pitching staff feels more at ease with what they can do, and then everyone else behind the mound knows that first person to touch the ball after it leaves the pitcher's hand is sure-handed. To have a guy in Jake Washer back, it was vital to this team in my mind, because the tangible sides of what he can do on the field we have seen. He spent a year learning and growing under Travis Watkins before really taking over, battled some injuries, and then we saw what he could do last year. And then to have a guy like Seth Cadell behind him, who got a lot of regular playing time last year, there were plenty of games where those two were in the lineup on the same day. And to have another power threat as a sophomore, who Cliff Godwin trusts behind the plate now as well, and if you earn Cliff's trust as a catcher, you're pretty well set. Then this team is that position is as sure-handed as any position defensively or in the pitching staff that this team has.
Moving on to third base, you have Nick Barber, and then you also have a guy in Thomas Francisco, and a guy who had been at third base last season, Colin Watt. We'll get to him later on as he has moved across the diamond to first base. So talk about those two guys. Nick Barber, someone who we're familiar with, hasn't really played third base so much, more second base, and then also some shortstop. So then also a guy like Thomas Francisco, who we've heard from Steven Igoe, that has a tremendous pop in his bat.
Yeah, with Barber, he didn't get a start at third last year, and that's because of the work Connor Litton did. Kind of surprisingly initially, that was a battle at third base heading into the year, and then Litton just grabbed it and never let go of it. And we saw the dividends of that paid. It's a big hole to fill, particularly defensively. And I think that will be the biggest focus to start the year, is how Barber adjusts at third defensively. Not necessarily what he does at the plate, but how he can handle the leather. Because what Litton did there, in my mind, got him drafted. I mean, it was that level of defense that was really unexpected to start the year from Connor Litton. Can Barber match that? He has a pretty slick glove when he's in the middle. Can he match it at third? That's one of the bigger curiosities that I have heading into this season. I'll tell you what, when I saw him a few weekends ago, he won the award of guy who looks the most different from this year to last year. He added over 20 pounds of muscle to his sophomore body. And so when I saw him, I didn't recognize him initially. It was that type of transformation. So he stayed in Greenville over the summer to work on his conditioning and to build up that muscle mass. And now he's over a buck 80, which is not where he was anywhere close to in his sophomore year. So he has a different look about him. There is a calm demeanor that he possesses that I think really works well with Turner Brown and Brady Lloyd and Spencer Brickhouse around that horn, that he fits in pretty nicely there. What can you get out of his bat? I think that's a decent question, because he has struggled there in his first 2 years. But defensively for me, I don't know if you can replace Connor Litton. Barber has shown some really good flashes up the middle. Can he bring that to third? I think that's the biggest question. Thomas Francisco, there's one of those guys that you heard so much about heading into the year and in the fall about the pop in his bat. You know, outside of that, I mean, it's a tough transition from, you know, heading into D1 baseball at the hot corner. So that's why I think you'll probably see Barber there initially to start. But I know how excited this group is for a freshman coming in that could maybe jump in right away in Francisco. But I would look for Barber to start initially.
Moving over to shortstop, of course you have a four-year starter now in Turner Brown. And then you also have a high-profile newcomer in Ryder Giles. And talk about those two.
Well, I was going through Turner's kind of bio and stats a few days ago, getting ready for the season, and he has played 170 games in his career. He has started all but four of them. Like that, if you really think about that, I mean, he has been the everyday shortstop since he walked into Greenville, and that has been with injuries. He had a number of shoulder injuries last year, and it cost him a good bulk of the season. He kept fighting through it, and you saw how it diminished his offensive performance because he just couldn't stay on the field enough. Defensively, there's no doubt what he can do there at short. And to have a senior at that position when he's surrounded by everyone younger than him, and to have a guy who has started in two NCAA tournaments already, who has been an absolute force in the field is invaluable. To have that experience at that position, it's right up there with having a valuable catcher at a veteran role like they have in Jake Washer. To have that type of guy right there at shortstop, and to have a guy that's been able to do whatever you really asked of him to do in Turner Brown, he's a marvel to watch when you really focus in on it. And he has battled through a lot of injury issues. He dealt with them in the summer, and he didn't play summer ball because of it. And we know about what happened now about a month ago to his family. But this is maybe the unquestioned leader of this team in my mind, and everything else revolves around him. For Ryder Giles, is he going to see time because of that? Yeah, he'll slide in there from here, you know, occasionally from here and there. But this is Turner Brown's spot. Like, he could put up a chair and he could, you know, sit down, and that's his spot as long as he stays on the field. Ryder Giles has impressed in camp heading in. They love the work ethic of this kid. And so will he maybe slide in at second base if Brady goes into center? You know, that's a possibility as well. But if Turner Brown's not at shortstop during the course of a game, it's because he's probably injured in some capacity, and I don't think anybody would want that.
Absolutely, and I'm glad you brought that up about the tragedy that Turner Brown's family experienced. Our prayers have certainly been with him and all those guys, and just awful. And but like you said, he's someone that he clearly has a tremendous amount of mental toughness and leadership ability. And I know last year one of the things that really stood out to me about Turner Brown is all those times when he was having quality at bats and just hitting the ball hard and not finding a way to get a base hit, and then he stuck with it. He didn't take that out to the field, and he continued to play excellent with the glove. And then he also was just able to late in the season start producing with the bat, even though his average didn't end up anywhere near where he would want it. He had a solid year offensively, especially late.
He had 400 in the conference tournament during right. those five games, and he had 300 in the postseason when you add in the NCAA tournament as well. He saved his best moments for last. You remember towards the very end of the regular season when he hit a home run against Cincinnati, and that sparked a rally against the Bearcats to yes. walk off with that game. He has been kind of in the middle of all these moments. He may not have that moment, that big moment, but he has been the catalyst for whether it's a memorable occurrence in a game or a run through a conference tournament like this team had last year. Turner Brown's been in the mix of every single part of it. And this is another thing that kind of blew my mind here, guys. He's already the program leader in sacrifices. He has a year left to play. He already has 42 sacrifices, as the most in ECU history. So that just speaks to he does what is asked of him, and he does it well. And so I wouldn't expect anything different from Turner Brown this year. I want to see him hit a home run from the right side. All of his homers have been hitting left-handed. I want to see a right-handed homer this year. That's the one thing I want more from Turner Brown this year, is a right-handed home run, because he needs to grace the jungle with a home run.
A funny thing about that, before we shift over to second base, is I recall, I guess it was Turner Brown's freshman year maybe, before you were on the call, or it may have been his.
That was my first year. Yes, first year.
Okay. Yes, now, do you recall we were playing NC State at Clark LeClaire, and he was, I believe, coming to the plate right-handed, and then Avent made a pitching change, and then he hit a home run left-handed, or the other way around. Other
yep.
way around. It's pretty funny.
Yeah, he was going to hit right-handed. They switched him to left, and he cracked a home run. Yep, absolutely.
But shifting over to second base, helping make the Pirates very solid up the middle, is a guy that had an unbelievable year last year, really a breakout season, Brady Lloyd. Hit .322 and also stole something like 16 bases. So he's or it is tremendous, rather, to have him back. And then you also have a guy behind him that you've heard a lot of good things about, and Connor Nolte. Talk about those two.
Yeah, I mean, Brady Lloyd might have been my favorite part of the year last year. I don't have favorites in terms of individuals, but the road that he has traveled to get to have a year like he did and make conference first team and to hit 322, I mean, it's something special that is now starting to get more notoriety in Greenville, of just him walking on, wasn't going to play collegiate D1 baseball, but his cousin, Jason Knights, who was on ECU with Cliff Godwin, told him, hey, you might like it here. And so he walked on and just did the work in his freshman and sophomore year. And then he got the opportunity to start at second in his junior year. And this team isn't nearly as good as they were last year without him having the type of year that he did. And so and he's also one of the nicest dudes on the team, on a team full of nice dudes. And so to have this type of production and now a celebration for what he did for a guy like this that has literally just brought his lunch pail, to use a Bud Foster reference, to work every day and has done what he's needed to do. It was awesome to see that, and this team doesn't have the offensive production that they did last year without him. He's also a guy where there's a question in center field this year, and we'll get to center here in a little bit, who, if there continues to be a bit of a question there in the beginning of the year, then he can just slide right over, and you go to a guy in Connor Norby, who is one of these highly touted freshmen from my neck of the woods out here in the triad, and a guy that brings some speed to the table with also a pretty slick glove. So having Brady Lloyd as your everyday second baseman, but also your utility knife guy in the field, is going to come into play again here in his senior year.
And shifting over to first base, and you have a guy, and he started all 62 ball games last year, and now he's a junior, Spencer Brickhouse, hit right at 300, 10 home runs, drove in 50. And then you have someone backing him up, potentially in Colin Watt, who I think was battling an injury last year, because we heard a lot of good things about him behind Connor Litton at third base.
Yeah, well, and here's where we'll see where Colin Watt factors in here. They loved his raw talent last year, and then an injury did knock him out for the vast majority of the year. And so he essentially has a clean slate heading into what's now his sophomore year. Whether it's at first or third, that remains to be seen. With Spencer Brickhouse, I mean, the platitudes kind of write themselves by this point. And again, I've just been kind of going back and looking at the numbers and what these guys have done over the last few days getting ready for the season, and just how remarkably consistent Spencer is. There might be moments where he has a slump in terms of the power, where he's not hitting a long ball for a stretch of games, and that happened in the middle of last year, but he is an on-base maniac. He always seems to drive the ball. There's very little weakly hit off of his bat. And defensively, he has really improved at first. And first base defense doesn't get talked about enough. He has made a lot of strides there. But the level of consistency that he has provided at first base offensively, where he's a career 300 hitter right now, coming off of being a career 550 hitter in high school, like, nothing has really fazed him. And he cut down on the strikeouts greatly last year. So now entering his junior year, you expect that number to dwindle even more. Don't forget Alec Burleson in this mix.
Yeah, because that's what I was just about to say. I'm sorry to interrupt you. But, yeah, no, I caught myself when I said that about Colin Watt. I was like, crap, I left out Alec Burleson.
Yeah. Well, and something tells me, who knows how it will shake out. I know Alec's been named the starter for opening day on the mound. But I would not be surprised at all if you see Alec in the lineup when he's pitching. Like that's the type of bat now that he has become, and how pivotal Alec Burleson in a very short amount of time has become to this team. The jumping into the rotation midway through last year, and we'll talk about the pitching staff here in a second. I know we should focus only on first base, but, you know, I mean, defensively, the work that he did sliding into first base, it took him a little bit getting consistently, you know, productive at the plate, but he was able to do just enough in the final month of the year to make you see what his potential was. And then what he did over the summer in summer ball in Bethesda, where he just hit moonshots every day.
Yeah, he was the Bambino.
In the Cal Ripken League. Like, I mean, that was a moment of clarity, I think, for everyone to say, whoa, this kid's really got something here. And now to see him, I mean, he is rocketing up prospect charts when you look at these breakdowns for 2020. And just nationally where he slides into collegiate baseball. There's one publication that has him in the top 50 of best baseball players in the sport. Like, I mean, that's how quickly this has come for Alec Burleson. And heading into his freshman year, I remember talking to both Dan Rozelle, pitching coach, and Jeff Palumbo, who hitting coach, you know, defensive coach, however you want to phrase, you know, Jeff the assistant and the recruiting coordinator. They were both really fighting for Alec in terms of Dan wanted him to be a pitcher. Jeff wanted him to be at first base. And they eventually came to the realization he can do both and handle it as a freshman. And to be a two-way guy starting crucial situations on the mound and then be at first base like he did at the end of the year in the conference tournament and the NCAA tournament, to have that experience as a youngster and then do what he did over the summer, coming into sophomore season where now he's the Friday guy to start the year. And oh, by the way, you're probably also going to be in the lineup when you're pitching. It's a lot to take on, but it's the similar amount of stuff that he had to put on his back last year, midway through the year, and he did it with ease. So to have this guy really round in and to give Spencer Brickhouse a day off defensively in a weekend series, and it put him at the DH spot and then just stretch that lineup out even more. I mean, you're going to see this team really hammer the ball this year with what we've seen from Burleson since the end of last year to now.
Corey, is this, would you say is it fair to say this is Cliff's deepest team he's ever had? I mean, it seems like the depth is not a problem for this. This is like the richest team that Cliff has ever had.
Yeah, this is, in terms of just, I would certainly say offensively, this is the deepest that he has had. That 2017 team was very close in my mind in terms of depth. But what happened there was the depth got tested very early and the team didn't quite know how to handle it. Last year, I think this gets overlooked, this team had plenty of injuries last year, but they didn't panic about it. They all knew what to do because they went through 2017. And so now you have so many options available this year at pretty much any position where if somebody goes down, you trust the guy immediately behind them in the wings. Or if someone's struggling, you can switch them out. I mean, there are so many people to play with now if you're Cliff offensively. I think what Cliff said at media day, I think holds true, and we'll get to pitching, I know, but there's depth in numbers in pitching, I think he said there's depth in talent in pitching, not necessarily in numbers. And so I think that will be tested at some point, but offensively, this lineup is as deep as he has had as head coach of this team, and it might be the deepest that the American has had in its time in existence.
Wow. That's saying a lot right there with the number of good
there's some good offensive clubs over the years in this conference. Yeah. Houston, USF have always been up there in terms of hitting the ball. UCF a few years ago was terrific offensively. Those Tulane teams of not too long ago under David Pierce, they could really mash the ball. This team 1-9 is almost impossible to get through cleanly.
Corey, are you keeping June clear on your calendar?
I have notified my extended family, my nuclear family, my friends, that I don't know when I would be available come June. I will say that. I've given people that warning.
Don't get married in June.
Yeah, it's like I had a friend get married regional weekend last year, and I said flat out in March, I'm like, buddy, I just don't think I'm going to be able to make it. Like, and he understood. He couldn't move the date. But I have notified people that, hey, if you want to visit or if you want me to come visit, July is probably the best time.
So make sure that it's
chickens. Yeah, not counting chickens. Just saying there's the possibility of it.
Yeah. So you plan with hope.
Yes.
Corey, go ahead, Dave.
I was just going to make a quick point. There's nothing wrong with, I know that Kyle loves this term, it's nothing wrong with swagger. I mean, I think this team can deliver the goods. As long as you can deliver the goods, it's nothing wrong with having confidence.
Well, I think I think we've had this conversation before when we last did a podcast, and I've had this talk with many people around ECU and even outside of ECU who kind of knows what the school is and what the program is and the fan base is. There is a natural hesitation to buy into hype and buy into expectations that this team does have. And with me being still relatively new to the world of ECU and the community, I completely understand it. But you can go however you want to go with this season in terms of expectation and what you want to see from this team. All I can tell you is that this team does have the ability. That this team does have. This team has the technology, to quote the $6 million man.
There you go. Nice.
They can do it. Like this is Cliff's best team to do it.
And I can do another line for you.
What's that?
From Wendy's. Where's the beef? This team has a lot of beef, right?
Oh, I mean, that's it. Yes, it has. I mean, we haven't even gotten to the outfield and the certain preseason All-American and Golden Spikes watch list award nominee and preseason player of the year. We haven't even talked about him yet. But I mean, this team will play a fun brand of baseball, and this team should win a lot of games if everything goes right. A lot can go wrong in baseball, but it's okay to lean in to what might happen this year, because it could happen. Like that's the roster, that's the setup here, that's how this team is built, is to do that. And yes, I'm not saying that word that starts with a vowel and ends with a vowel and is five letters long as the city in Nebraska, but it's the home of corn and wheat and a large baseball stadium that's occupied the end of June.
County Crow baseball.
Yeah, it's also the home of the County Crows. And I'm the Rain King. And if you don't want to buy into it because of the past, that's fine. If you want to buy into it because you think that this is the team that can do it, that's fine. I'm telling you what I see, and come 4 o'clock Friday, all can be thrown out the window because then the season officially starts. But from what I see, this team can do it. This team has the pieces to do it. Now let's see what happens over 56 games and change.
And it's the former basketball great Othello Meadows. That's where he lives. So that's where he's going to, when we do make it there to that town you're talking about, he lives. He's going to throw a big party for us. So that's what he
says. Is he?
Yes.
All right. All right.
He said that on the podcast. We got to hold him to it. He's a huge baseball fan. He loves Cliff Godwin and the team. And of course the fact that it's the Pirates, and he loves that city because of what's there. So he said that when it happens that, he's going to throw a big party for us, and we'll have a big live podcast there.
All right. All right. I'm down.
Corey, moving on to the outfield, obviously you lose some significant contributions from guys like Dwanye Williams-Sutton and then also Drew Hendrickson. But you have that guy that you mentioned a moment ago. You never called his name. Greenville native, D.H. Conley product, Bryant Packard, a guy that's on everybody's All-American list and a candidate, like you said, for the Golden Spikes Award for the top player in college baseball. Batted over 400 last year, 14 bombs, drove in 50. Just an unbelievable season for Pack. And then you also have other guys who are who had significant experience last year in spot starting roles, like Dusty Baker and Chandler Jenkins, but then you have some tremendous newcomers as well. And a lot of times, like you know, particularly on the corners, but then also sometimes with center field as well, and those outfielders are used interchangeably. So talk a little bit about what we bring back and then the newcomers.
Well, Bryant Packard, I mean, I'll say this. It would be unfair to expect that type of year again from him. Can he do it? Sure. Can he hit over 400 again for his junior year? Yeah. Can he have a 32-game hitting streak? Possibly. I mean, that's the type of talent this kid has. And to see him, we have to remember last year, he started that hitting streak and started that run after missing, I want to say it was 2.5-3 weeks with a back injury. Like, I mean, there was not a certainty that he would start last year on time. Like, he was dealing with a ton of injuries his freshman year. That's what limited him when he started out as a Pirate. Dealt with the same injuries over the summer and fall heading into 2018. And then there was a severe concern that he was not going to be around to begin the year. Then he missed time to start the year. And once he got back, no one could get him out. And to have that back and to have him say on his own, this is the healthiest he's ever felt playing this sport, high school or college level. I mean, it's hard to not get excited about what he could do this year of all years as a junior with what could be down the line for this team and what could be down the line for him come June. So, can he be better than what we saw last year? It's going to be tough, but if anyone has the skill set to do it, it's probably him. He has shown he's slimmed down a little bit as well from Team USA ball over the summer, where he actually got really sick and lost a ton of weight, and then he gained it back but got fitter in the process. So that should help him out defensively as well in left field, where that's probably the one area where he could really show another stride in, is kind of that first step defensively, reading the ball off the bat. But, I mean, you're talking about the best leadoff hitter in the country. If he stays in the leadoff spot to start the year with everything that he can do, he's not just a power guy. He is an all-around, spray-to-all-field guy. He can drop a bunt down if you need him to, but why would you take that bat out of his hands with what he has shown you? He's awesome. He's maybe the most amazing player that I've seen in my time at ECU, with just what he did last year on that run. And that includes DeWanye and every tool that he had last year and throughout his career. What Bryant Packard did was unbelievably special last year. And whether he can match that is going to be fun to watch. I can tell you this, it's going to have a pretty dang good year, even if he can't hit over 400 like he did last year. The other two spots, guys, keep an eye on Bryson Wuerl in center. I really like the ability that this kid has, both sides of the plate, power on both sides of the plate, sneaky fast for a guy of that size, and now with a year under his belt to experience college baseball, got a couple of quality appearances at the end of last year and had some production out of that. I think he's the guy in center to kind of begin this year. And if he can put it together in his sophomore year, he has the same level of tools that DeWanye did. I really believe that, except he can hit from both sides of the plate. So Bryson Wuerl is kind of my candidate this year to a guy that nobody's really talking about that I think could have a massive breakout year. And he's kind of the guy in center field that I'm keeping an eye on right now. Then Chandler Jenkins, you guys mentioned him. You're talking about a JUCO player of the year 2 years ago that just couldn't quite find it last year at the plate. I think the game was, frankly, a little faster than he expected heading into last year. I expect a pretty big jump from him in right field if he does get the call in right field to begin the year, because you don't win that award on a fluke. Like, that, he has some legit pop from the left side, and if he can catch up to it this year, then he's going to make that lineup even more dangerous.
That's an excellent look at things positionally. Let's move to the mound. The starting rotation for the Raptors series this weekend was released earlier today, and there were some surprises. There were some surprises there. Excuse me, Dave. Did you have something you wanted to say about that?
Yeah, you and I, and the same thing I mentioned to Kyle. The question I've been dying, the $64,000 question. All day long I've been waiting to talk to you, Corey, is, sorry, Bubba, I was just going to quickly ask, what's going on with Trey Benton? Is there a lack of confidence? Is it that he just got beat out and maybe he's mid-weeker or coming out of the bullpen? Can you enlighten us there?
I wish if I had any inside information, I would clue you in on it.
Okay.
I was a little bit surprised as well when the rotation came out this week today. Or yesterday, whenever you're dropping this podcast. But
yeah,
I have a little peek behind the curtain of Radio Magic there. I thought Trey would be in the Saturday spot this weekend,
yeah.
And I thought Jake would be back end of the bullpen guy. That's kind of what I had been anticipating heading into the season. I'll say that it's hard to deny the work that Jake did over the summer when he was with Team USA and when he was up in the up doing a little bit of summer ball work. But with Trey, he had a really great summer at the Cape as well with the Bourne Braves. But it's easy to kind of forget how unbelievable he was out of the pen last year. And I don't think this is the plan for him for the year. In fact, I don't think it can be the plan for him throughout the year because I do think this team needs him in a starting role. But if maybe it's to ease him into starting again. It's been no secret that in the back halves of both his freshman and his sophomore years, he has kind of fizzled out's not the right term, but he has lost some stamina. And that's why, you know, it's part of why he moved to the bullpen last year down the stretch. So maybe this is a way to kind of ease the workload in for him so that come conference play time, he's ready to rock for a starting role. I thought it would be Alec, Trey, and Tyler in the weekend to see Jake in there and grab that Saturday spot. It's a bit of a surprise, but it's not like he doesn't have the talent to do it and the stuff to do it. He might have the best raw stuff on the team. And what he did down the stretch last year in the postseason, yeah. He started the conference title game. He started the regional loss against Wilmington when Rain knocked him out, but he was cruising. And
was
then,
that 6-0, right? I mean, he was rolling 6-0.
It was, I think it was 4-0, and then he was lifted because of Rain. They added on a run after he was done, and then the wheels fell off. But when Jake, the stuff is so electric, it's can he harness it? And he was able to, with Team USA, in front of his head coach, against international competition, and over the fall and spring, he's been able to as well. So to give him the crack to get back into the weekend rotation to start off his junior year, I think everyone's good with that. It's whether or not there is any question about Trey being able to do that. I don't think there is, at least initially. This might be part of a longer plan to make sure that he can stay into June and be a guy. That's me speaking from my point of view. I don't know what the reasoning behind it was. You'll probably hear it over the next couple of days once we get to Saturday and Jake is on the mound instead of Trey.
That makes more sense, because when I saw that on Twitter earlier today, I was baffled, because I thought Trey Benton, that's one of your guys, and but then I know that there's guys like here's another guy that comes to mind. He battled injuries. He's young. Was young last year, being, I want to say, a rookie. He's a freshman. But Gavin Williams, what's the status of him? Is he a guy that he's got a big command? He's a guy that actually is big time. I think if he can stay injury free, he can have a lot of success over the next couple of years with the Pirates.
Not many guys in college baseball, fellas, can hit triple digits with a fastball. Gavin Williams can. And I think it was fascinating to see last year when he did. I think that caused him to be on the shelf for a lot of the years because his arm would just not handle it as well as he thought. So to dial him back a little bit, which he did hang out in the Cape last year, but he didn't do a ton over fall. This team did shut down a lot of guys over fall. To try and manage injuries a little bit because they went so deep into the year last year. With Gavin Williams, I think they see him as a guy that could start now with the type of electricity he can bring to the mound. He almost seems tailor-made for a back end of the bullpen guy, but I know that they envision, and I think he envisions, being a starter at some point. Whether that is midweek, whether that is weekend, it wouldn't shock me at all to see him get a crack in one of these early midweek games, or maybe that there's that Monday game coming up in the second weekend of the year, or something like that, to give him an opportunity to do that. That wouldn't shock me in the least. It's whether or not with the arsenal that he has, and it's one of the best in the conference when it's working, can his arm hang in with that? Because with that type of stuff comes a lot of torque and a lot of violence in the arm. And we saw it creep in a little bit last year. If it can hold up, it's maybe the best pitching weapon that a team might have in the conference, like just in their back pocket.
Another guy in the midweek is a guy named Jake Kuchmaner, of course, sophomore. He started 5 games last year, performed very well in that role. And so that's another proven midweek option that we have at our disposal.
Let's face it, guys, he won the conference tournament for this team. That with everything that happened there in Clearwater, his 7-inning shutout, or it wasn't a shutout, but a 7-inning complete game effort against Houston won them the tournament. And you saw, he was kind of pitching to contact a little bit in that game. He has pitched to contact in his start so far. His curveball is really nasty when it's going. And there's a guy that's just sort of climbed the ladder slowly but surely up the ranks of this pitching staff to the point where now there is a legitimate amount of trust in him to get jobs done, whether it's in midweek or coming in the bullpen in a weekend role, which he did a lot towards the end of last year in the regular season. He did come out of the bullpen in the late game situations to try and save the arms of Ryan Ross and Davis Kirkpatrick and those guys who are being used to finish out games, and Zach Barnes as well, who's back in the mix this year. Kuchmaner is a guy that is probably not going to get much attention heading into the year from opposing teams. But it's a guy that will get you 5 innings of pretty sure-handed baseball and then maybe even further, like he showed at Clearwater last year.
We get Kyle from LaGrange from the stands. Can he pitch? Do you think he has some Kyle, do you have any eligibility?
I think I have a couple years of eligibility left.
Wow.
Yeah, I don't think anybody wants me to do anything athletic, though.
I think we can come bring him out. You can be like the setup guy before the closer.
Yeah, I think I'd be better off wearing the PD uniform.
Oh, my God. I can't see you doing that. I think it's funny. That would be great.
Go hug some co-eds. That'd be pretty good at that.
Now, Corey, we've talked about Trey Benton and how he's going to be starting off in the bullpen / midweek starter role, and then the same with Gavin Williams. So you lose some guys off last year's team, a guy particularly like Davis Kirkpatrick, who had an ERA below one. And it wasn't surprising that he had success after the year that he had had in the summer ball up in the Shenandoah Valley League or what, or at least with that team there in Harrisonburg. But just he was lights out last year, and just opponents barely hit over 200 against him. Talk a little bit about some of the options we have out of the pen.
Yeah, I mean, I think the weekend rotation announcement threw a little bit of this into confusion for those outside the program, because heading into the year, you kind of thought Agnos was the guy at the end of the bullpen to come in and finish the job, where Kirkpatrick was that last year, Ryan Ross was that last year. Zach Barnes is the one of that group that remains, and he really just burst onto the scene about April last year, and he came out of nowhere, the JUCO, and just worked his way into more trustworthy roles to the point where he was out there in crucial situations in Clearwater during the conference tournament. He's the one guy of those three that remains. Keep an eye on Sam Lanier this year, who is entering his senior year, and we have seen it from him, and we saw it his freshman year, which feels like a while ago now, the 2016 team that made the Supers, and we have seen real flashes of it ever since. We just haven't seen it consistently enough. That slider of his is one of the best pitches on this team. I will maintain that until proven otherwise. So I like having him back in the mold. I know this team likes Carter Spivey, the freshman coming in from Virginia, quite a bit. Evan Valava is a guy, a redshirt senior who came on very late last year after Tommy John and just snaked wins left and right, but he was also pretty locked down in the process. So maybe he's got a way into the mix here as well. We've already talked about one two-way guy in Alec Burleson. Steven Wilmer is the other two-way guy that is coming in this year. He's a freshman from Florida. They like what he can do in the outfield. They think he's got some legitimate potential on the mound, a southpaw coming in. So that might be your first real, you know, newcomer that makes a push into some trustworthy roles or a midweek start, that sort of thing. We haven't talked about Tyler Smith yet, and he's the Sunday guy. He was a revelation last year. His sinker, Sam Lanier's slider is one thing. Tyler Smith's sinker is the best pitch on this pitching staff, and there's so many different variations of it. And it's hard to decipher what they are. You need the radar gun to figure out what every pitch he has is, because he has about three different sinkers in his arsenal, plus a four-seam fastball, and now he's working on a slider to become a more well-rounded guy instead of just a pitch-to-contact pitcher. He ran out of steam at the end of last year. He admitted as much, and he dialed it back in the offseason because of it to gear up for this year. Tyler Smith is the ace in the hole for this team, both figuratively and literally in the Sunday role. This team was so good in Sundays last year, and Tyler Smith turned out to be one of the big reasons why. So we talked about the depth and talent, maybe not necessarily the numbers and the pitching staff. Tyler Smith going deep into ball games on Sundays is going to be a big focal point this year for me, because if he can do that, that sets everything up for the rest of the pitching staff.
Another two-way guy, we talked about a couple of them, is Ryder Giles. Ryder, he's also a shortstop, of course, but he's someone who Steven Igo mentioned in one of his scrimmage recaps this weekend as someone who may be used in spot relief, particularly against right-handers. He doesn't throw particularly hard, but he has a unique arm slot. So talk a little bit about Ryder Giles.
Yeah, it's a guy that this goes back to what we had said before about, you know, depth is there and talent, maybe not numbers. Ryder Giles is a guy that wasn't really projected as a two-way guy heading in that may become one, just to have another option there, especially right-handed option in the bullpen. He had an ERA about .170 in high school in Vass, and so there's something there that they want to work with and tweak. His future is probably at short, and he can really flash leather at short, but this speaks to the creativity that this program can have, where they might put a guy on the mound that they maybe didn't anticipate, but knows has some ability to get them out there and try something, especially early in the year. Why not try something like this early in the season?
And I want to ask you, Corey, as far as the season's concerned, are there any, the schedule is concerned, what do you see, some games that really stick out to you? And, of course, we want to talk quickly about Radford for this weekend.
Yeah, the first three weekends at home stand out because it's pretty rare for this team to start off with so many at home. But they make up for it with a bunch of road trips in March, with the two-gamer in Mississippi, with the weekend series at Maryland, and then once you get into April and you have three weekends in a row on the road with USF, with Houston, with UCLA. This is an unbalanced schedule, which is abnormal for this program. So I think that they scheduled early at home to try and get some wins in the bank against some teams that you think that they could be able to take care of. Baseball is weird, and so you don't know what's going to happen, but the schedule gets pretty daunting come March with all the road trips to some very challenging locations, and conference play begins, and with everything that happened last year and 44 wins on the year and winning the conference title on Clearwater, they finished fourth in the regular season in the American. Like, a conference play gets strange. And a lot changes on a very quick turn of the heel in league play. So I think they want to try and settle themselves into the year with February, because once March hits, there's no let up until the season comes to an end in May or June. So it's a unique setup to the schedule this year, one that they don't do often, but some tweaks to the conference slate with not needing a bye week have really precipitated it. Add in the home and home with Maryland that started last year in Greenville that you need to return this year, and then the spring break trip into the SEC, and you have one of the most challenging schedules in the country heading into the year. And then UCLA is a top five team that is on the schedule in April. So every road trip is against high quality competition. So it's important to pick up your wins at home, because they're going to be very, very challenging to come by when you're away from Clark LeClaire.
And what do you know about Radford for this weekend for Pirate fans and Pirate Nation listening as we get folks ready for the first pitch on Friday afternoon at 4 o'clock?
Yeah, Radford's a team that, kind of like a lot of Big South teams, the lineup is going to dictate how far they go. And this is a pretty decent lineup that they have coming back, particularly in the outfield. Spencer Horwick's probably going to get drafted. He's going to be in one of the outfield spots heading into this weekend. They have a really solid top half of the lineup. Pitching-wise, that they have a fifth-year senior that's probably going to be starting on Friday, and Zach Ridgely. They haven't confirmed who is going to be in the rotation yet, but you have a fifth-year guy leading the way that was decent last year. After that, it drops off pretty hard, and that's not abnormal in that conference and conferences of that size, where pitching doesn't necessarily come to fruition there. You try and mash teams. You try and beat them with your offense. And Radford, about a middle-of-the-pack team last year, finished middle-of-the-pack offensively. Those two are one and the same, but this is not that far removed from a team that has won this conference a couple times in the last handful of years. They have some holes in the bottom of the lineup. They have some holes in the rotation once you get through Friday that this Pirate team should be able to pick on. But the middle of the order is going to be a pretty decent challenge here, particularly with Horwitz in the outfield. Kyle Butler's out there who slashed .270, .370 last year it's a talented group in the outfield. Do they have enough around them to pose a really consistent threat offensively against this pitching staff? We'll have to see.
Well, Corey Glore, my high school baseball coach, used to say, finish strong. I think it's not how you start, it's how you finish with this podcast. And appreciate the time, man, the long visit. I know that you have not only your Pirate duties, but also you have another job as well. So we appreciate you very much for the long visit. And definitely it's going to be an interesting season, and hopefully we can have that long five-letter word you were talking about at the end of the season to celebrate finally.
That word is Omaha. That's how I'm going to end the podcast.
All right. Well, thank you, man, very much. Appreciate you, and I look forward to having you on again soon.
Yeah, guys, let's play ball. It's going to be fun.
You've been listening to the Sports Objective Podcast. Join us next time as the guys will be objective, and the objective is sports.